You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. The countdown to kickoff continues, and we're all over it like Oprah on a baked ham. Teddy Cover's going to step up and in straight from the strip, or we should say straight off the strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, from a Ted Sportsbook and a casino. Warren Sharp back in the rotation, and it's a good thing because Warren really is one of the sharpest minds in the business. Warren will help us break down the final two National Football League Conference Championship games. The countdown to Super Bowl 51 begins. We're going to kick it on the program today with a Super Bowl champion, a man who played and won a Super Bowl with the Pittsburgh Steelers, a nine-time Pro Bowler, and somebody who's actually a Hall of Fame finalist this year. Alan Faneca will join us. Longtime Pittsburgh Steeler offensive lineman will step up and break it down with us. Yesterday, we had Tom Brady Sr. on the program. Tomorrow, we have Big Ben Roethlisberger's mother on the show. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Tom Brady Sr., pretty cool stuff, though, right there. Yeah, somebody was asking me, you getting John Elway's mother tomorrow? I'm like, no, we're not getting Elway. Unless she can break down the games. Does she have an opinion on Goodell not going to Boston? And hey, why not? We've got a really, really crazy out-of-the-box guest that might be joining us next week. And this is, no one will ever guess this in a million years. So this is way crazy, but that's later. That's later. What do we have going on today? As I stated, Teddy Covers, Warren Sharp, and Alan Faneca. All right, you're not going to find a better football breakdown in the Game Time Decisions today, right now, on the Fantasy Sports Network. Yesterday was a big day in the Major League Baseball world, as the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame finalists were announced and the inductees were announced. Three players get the call: Ivan Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell, and of course, Tim Raines. Now, to be honest with you, I wanted to wear a Montreal Expos jersey today, and I got a couple of them, but a lot of them are in a storage locker in Las Vegas right now. Every time I see that show, Storage Wars, I'm always scared I'm going to see my clothes being sold on that show, but the locker's still good. The locker's still good. But the fact is, I did a live show in Montreal last week, and I wore an Expo jersey that night, and, you know, I like to pound back a couple of vodka and crayons at these live events, and unfortunately, there was some spillage on the jersey. I was like, I can't wear a jersey with, like, vodka stains on it. So instead, I'm like, yeah, this is the next best thing. It's Montreal. Yuppie's with the Canadians, but just doesn't feel right, Yuppie with the Canadians. It doesn't. It doesn't feel right. But you know what does feel right? Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame. What can you say about Tim Raines? You know, the fact that he had to wait as long as he did is freaking ridiculous. And it's almost bittersweet for Montreal Expo fans. Because the Expos don't exist anymore, but there is a legion of Expo fans that yearn for yesteryear. The fact of the matter is, the Montreal Expos have a deeper tradition and more Hall of Famers and great players than like a majority of franchises in Major League Baseball. But the problem was, they played in Montreal. They were never acknowledged. And I read a lot of columns to why did it take Tim Raines so long to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. It was like, well, he played in Montreal. Well, yeah, the same Montreal that Jackie Robinson played in before he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, the same Montreal that had 3 million fans in the freaking 70s in Olympic Stadium. You know, the same Montreal with Andre Dawson, Gary Carter. They are also Hall of Famers. You know, so the preposterous notion. I don't care, like, if you played in Montreal, you played in Mars, man. If you stole 70 or more bases in six consecutive freaking seasons, and you finished your career with 2,605 freaking hits and three World Series championships, why the hell do you wait so long to get into the Hall of Fame? And I'll tell you why it takes so long. Because these sanctimonious jackasses who are the voters for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. I sat with these guys. I used to cover Major League Baseball. I sat in a Major League Baseball press box every freaking night, all right, with Hall of Fame voters, Baseball Writers of America type of people. These dudes are too busy stuffing their faces with free hot dogs during the game to barely see what's going on to the game they're watching. They're not even watching the rest of the games. And Major League Baseball, it's a sanctimonious place, their Hall of Fame. But really, you have a bunch of jackasses that didn't even play like peewee baseball deciding who the greatest baseball players of all time are. And it's great that Tim Raines is in the Hall of Fame, but another Montreal Expo should be in the Hall of Fame too. Pete Rose. That's right. Pete Rose, an Expo? Pete Rose got his 4,000th hit as a member of the Montreal Expos. Another little piece of tradition right there. Now, unfortunately, the Montreal Expos, for all the great players that they had, they never won a World Series. And if they ever would have won, the team would probably still be there right now. But the fact is, if ends and butts were candies and nuts, we'd all be Hall of Famers. We're not going to be, all right? But it's not a World Series championship. You see the joy of Tim Raines being inducted into the Hall of Fame has brought Expo fans, and it just sort of keeps the momentum going to the return of Major League Baseball to the city of Montreal. Now, Jonah Carey deserves a ton of credit for this. You know, Jonah Carey grew up a Montreal Expo fan and has turned into like the big rock star baseball nerd guy. Everybody loves Jonah Carey. People listen to Jonah Carey. Jonah Carey pounded the pavement hard for Tim Raines to get into the Hall of Fame. And if it wasn't for him, I'm not so sure these other jackasses would have paid as much attention as they should have. But it keeps the momentum going. And I'll tell you what, it's not a matter of a if. It's just a matter of when Major League Baseball returns to Montreal. They're up next. If a team relocates, they're going to Montreal. After the collective bargaining agreement is done and they get their new contracts in place, there will eventually be Major League Baseball expansion, and it will be in Montreal, and it'll be a glorious night when they welcome Hall of Famer Tim Raines back to a new stadium and hang up that Hall of Fame banner. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live. Let's do this. We've got a great show lined up. We've got Warren Sharp is going to join us in a couple of minutes. We've got Alan Faneca, nine-time Pro Bowler. We opened up the show talking about the Hall of Fame and Tim Raines being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Alan Faneca is actually a 2017 Hall of Fame finalist. It's going to be announced I guess it is announced, right? It's coming up or whatever it is. I don't know. I'm bad with dates. I've been on the road as of late. Is it February 4th, I think, actually, before the Super Bowl? Whenever it is. All right. We got Alan Faneca. We'll talk about the Steelers-Patriots game. We got Warren Sharp. We're talking football. Let's send it to Las Vegas, Nevada right now and talk some football with Teddy Covers, Ted Sportsbook and Casino, sportsmemo.com, one of the Covers experts. What's up, Teddy?
What's a good word, Marense? How are you today?
I'm ready for some football, Teddy. You know, I haven't had a great track record in past years with Super Bowls. In fact, I went to breakfast and lunch with you before last year's Super Bowl, and it didn't end up well. Next time I get an invite to go to lunch with you, Malinsky, before the Super Bowl, I'm going to pass.
Good call.
Yeah, but didn't end well. I do great with the college championships. I even picked the final score this year. But I do well with the conference championship game. So, you know, you and I have talked about this. The Super Bowl is a tough game to bet, and I'm going to attack it from a prop perspective. I almost feel like this is the last weekend where I'm attacking things. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, we already have lines out for all the potential matchups in the Super Bowl. There were a couple of offshore sports books posted, and I would expect something similar. But basically, the point spread range was if it's the Packers, they'll be pick 'em, basically either way against the Steelers or the Patriots. And if it's I said that wrong. Let me re-say that. My apologies. If it's Pittsburgh, they'll be pick 'em against the Packers or the Falcons. If it's New England, they'll be in the range of -3 against Green Bay, -3.5 against Atlanta. So you already have point spreads you can consider without having to worry about what it's going to be 2 weeks from now on Super Bowl Sunday.
I see that I've seen a number of two, AFC to win the Super Bowl, -140. And, you know, I guess if you simplify things, the AFC have the two better defenses, and normally the better defense ends up winning the Super Bowl. But nevertheless, let's talk about the Packers and the Falcons out of the gate here. People are not talking about defense in this game. But, Teddy, you and I, we're both, you know, both Michigan guys. You actually went there. I've been on the campus, but I never went to class there.
Yeah, so me and you have a comparable experience.
Yeah, yeah, I've been there, but yeah, you went there. Yeah, it's a little bit of a difference. And in fact, I had a run-in with campus police, but that's besides the point.
Shocker.
Yeah, yeah, but what a beautiful little town, Ann Arbor. But what we also have in common is we used to also bet a lot on the Arena League before it got really crazy and they only started paying players $50 a game and it was hard to cap. But I look at this game, it's like an Arena Football League game, isn't it, Teddy? Who can come up with a stop or two along the way? I mean, it's the same sort of theory as the Arena League. 3 points are going to feel like a punt for these teams. You're going to have to rack up points. If anybody gets up by 14, by 21, no lead is safe in this football game. It really has a feel of an arena game to me.
Yeah, and so many arena games come down to who can get a stop that matters in the fourth quarter. So when you look at these two offenses, they both grade out really, really good. I mean, the Falcons, historic numbers in terms of yards per play, in terms of their differential versus the rest of the league. You know, they were a half yard per play better than the number two team in the NFL this year. They were 1.2 yards per play. That's every single snap. They're gaining 1.2 yards more than the average offensive team. Kyle Shanahan, his name's been bandied about for all of these head coaching jobs. He may well end up with a job in San Francisco for the 49ers, in large part, because of the success of this Atlanta Falcons offense. And they've done it despite their best receiver, Leo Jones, being banged up down the stretch and not being at 100%. So I'm a believer in the Falcons offense, and I'm certainly a believer in Aaron Rodgers. What Rodgers has been able to do during the stretch, 6 straight games of 30-plus for Green Bay. And what Rodgers has been able to do, extending plays, freelancing, creating, I don't know if there's another quarterback in the NFL that can do that right now. So we are talking about two elite offenses. The whole handicap here comes down to one simple question, and you nailed it. Which team's capable of getting a stop? And in my mind, Gabe, I honestly think that Atlanta, despite the fact that their defensive numbers over the course of the full season weren't very good, look at them down the stretch. Their last 5 games, they held 4 opponents at 20 or less.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn went with the youth movement this year. 5 of their back 7 starters, first or second year players. What happens with young guys? You're going to get burned early. Hopefully, by December and January, you'll have learned from those lessons. And I think that we've seen that from Atlanta over the course of the last month or so. That defense has gotten better. I have not seen that from Green Bay. And we all know, look, if the Rodgers doesn't complete that incredible pass to Cook last week and Dallas wins the toss in overtime, the Cowboys were marching down the field into the end zone. They were going to win that game and cover the spread.
Yeah, they went down the field with ease, as you stated. Yeah. And you know, last week as well, man, Russell Wilson was running for his life. The defensive, the DBs did a great job with the Atlanta Falcons. You know, normally Baldwin's a crafty dude, man. It's going to get open. They were in his face. They're like a pack of wolves. You know, very young, aggressive defense, quick to the ball. And I tell you what, Teddy, that Georgia Dome, you know, they've been accused of piping in fan noise in the past and stuff. And
well, they did it.
Yeah, I know. They did. They allegedly, and then they did. You know, it's never really been known. You know, and oh, it's one of the craziest places to play. But that was a madhouse last week. And it's the last ever game in the Georgia Dome with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. And, you know, the crowd is going to be a factor there. And it did affect Seattle. Russell Wilson was off. I like that the match of the Packers O-line's been playing great, but I'm with you. I think the Packers, as good as they've been, look at last week. They got off to that great start, and you know Dallas just ran out of time. Green Bay were lucky to hang on. The week before, you know, frigid conditions, the giant wide receivers choked, didn't catch touchdown passes early, changed the dynamic of that football game. That secondary's banged up, and you got Gunter banged up now back there. And, you know, you got a team that can exploit this. I'm buying into the Falcons as well. What do you think of my comparison of the Falcons to the old school Rams team, the fastest show on turf? You mentioned it. You know, the Falcons have scored the eighth most points in NFL history. They're putting up 35 points a game at home this season. Matt Ryan's quarterback rating of 117.1 is the fifth highest in NFL history. These are historic numbers this offense is putting up. And in that first game, Teddy, when they beat him 33-32, you mentioned Julio Jones been banged up. Julio only had three catches for like 29 yards. Matt Ryan still put up 33 points and threw three touchdown passes.
Yeah, sure. He's only thrown seven picks all season. All right, and that's, I mean, obviously in a game of this magnitude, who's going to make a mistake? You know, which team's going to screw up? Which QB is going to screw up? But you talk about the nature of that Falcons offense, and it's not a one-dimensional attack. You know, it's not even close to being a one-dimensional attack. They run the football extremely well. They've got an elite QB. You know, it's hard to bet against Aaron Rodgers in this point spread range. We know how good Rodgers has been, but the historic nature of Atlanta's offense is well reflected in this total. We're talking about the highest total in NFL playoff history. I've lived in Las Vegas since 1998, and this is the second highest total that I've ever seen. There was a game back in 2000. You talked about the Rams. It was the greatest show on turf. St. Louis Rams at the time going against San Francisco. That game was totaled at 62. Final score, 34-24. Complete shootout. And it stayed under the number.
Yeah. You know, going back in days, I was talking about that old Bills 49ers shootout from years ago in the 90s. They never played each other in the Super Bowl. I think it might have been the first game without a punt. No, nobody punted. They went up and down the field. All right, Teddy. So, hard, you know, like you said, it's hard. I want to get to the next game. It's hard to lay 5 points right now in this spot to weigh the, you know, on the roll that the Packers are on. But with that being stated, feels like the odds makers and the books are trying to reel you in and bait you. Come on, hey, we'll give you 5 points with the Packers. You know what I mean? We'll give you five. That's a lot. And that tells me, yeah, they're doing that because they know how good this Atlanta team is. I think Atlanta beats them and it goes over.
Yeah, this is definitely a game where the public is on the underdog. And let's make no mistake about it. The public have cleaned the clocks of the bookmakers and the wise guys over the first 2 weeks of the playoffs. The public has destroyed the sportsbooks here in Vegas. They called last weekend's results the worst. I know, for, you know, one sports got the worst result in the last five years.
That's a shame.
For any single day. So the public has been cleaning up the last 2 weeks. The public loves Green Bay, plus the points in this one.
All right, so there's been some line movement in this next one with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Been sitting at 5.5 for most part of the week. I see some sixes popping up right now, Teddy. Total sitting at 50 here. And you know what? I'm glad that the lines are moving because I'm on the underdog in this football game. Everyone, you want to talk about how hot the Packers are. The Steelers, and you, props to you, Teddy. You brought this up weeks ago and nobody was talking about it with their defense, but the emergence of Bud Dupree coming back. And, you know, James Harrison revving it up once again. I'm looking at the young kids in the secondary. You talk about a youth movement in Atlanta. Tomlin did the same thing. He's like, you know what? My best guys are young guys. Burns, get out there. You're in. And you know what I mean? You got all these young kids out there, very aggressive. They're getting to the quarterback. I think that kid, the Tua kid out of Notre Dame's a big key this week. Houston did a great job of getting Brady's face. And we saw the offense struggle a little bit. I think this is a very, very evenly matched football game, Teddy. What's your take?
You know, it's a matter of how much you believe in the New England mystique and how much you're concerned about the Steelers' red zone problems, because Pittsburgh has had issues in the red zone all season long. They won a game last week in which the offense didn't score a touchdown. That's not going to happen in New England.
No.
You know, and it's not been something that has been a short-term problem for Pittsburgh, despite the fact that we have an elite passing game and a running back who's as good as any in the NFL, built to win games in January. It's a Steelers team that, and it happened the first game, and of course that was a Landry Jones game, so we don't want to go nuts about it, but it's been a problem for Pittsburgh. They have to score touchdowns when they get inside the 20-yard line, and they, you know, haven't done that particularly well. And the Patriots, you know, this bend but don't break defense. The defensive numbers have been solid. They're not spectacular. They can be pushed around at the line of scrimmage. They are vulnerable to power rushing games at times this season. But you can count on New England taking advantage of the red zone opportunities. And with Pittsburgh, I'm telling you, if you're taking the Steelers plus the points, you better hope this team scores touchdowns, because if they do what they did last week and what they've done repeatedly this season, kicking field goals, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the dichotomy of the Steelers' offense, home and away. And the fact is, in the last seven road playoff games, they only average 19 points a game. And it is. It's a leap of faith here. They are evenly matched. The Patriots struggle in AFC Conference Championship games. You know, 1-3 straight up the last four, point spread-wise. 1-6 the last seven AFC Conference Championship games. We're in conversation with Teddy. Quickly on the total, and then we'll play rapid fire in our final minute, Teddy. Over-under is 50 here. Patriots defense only giving up 15.9 points per game. Steelers having problems in the red zone. This does not feel like a track meet, this one.
No, and you know, we're talking about both teams offensively. Their game plan is likely to keep the other offense off the field.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about quick strikes in this contest. We'll see some of that in Green Bay, Atlanta. In this game, I think we're looking at a lot more ball control, and let's keep that other QB on the sideline. So no argument here. If I'm playing the total in this one, I could only look at the under.
All right, we've only got 45 seconds here, Teddy. Quick hits. Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets, fun team as of late. I've been cashing tickets with them. They're getting 12.5 tonight. Total's 220. And the T-Wolves and Clippers, no Chris Paul. I see the T-Wolves now laying 1 point. I don't know, man. You know, Felton looked pretty good the other night. Quick takes these games. Any opinions?
Spurs look really bored right now. This is their sixth straight game where they're covering double digits. But don't underestimate the Gary Harris absence for Denver. He's one of these players that nobody pays attention to. He has an enormous impact on their team, on the floor, and against the spread. Clips, T-Wolves, no opinion. Let's watch what L.A. is going to do without Chris Paul. Not a game that I have any interest in wagering on.
You know, I had the Nuggets. We got to get out of here. But I had the Nuggets against the Lakers the other night, and Gary Harris wasn't there. But I was like, it's the Lakers. But Gary Harris is the exact type of guy you need when you're playing against the Spurs. You know, the Lakers or whatever. You know, Spurs, you want a guy like Gary Harris out there. But you're right. Spurs are bored. Raptors in the same sort of mode right now. Tired, flat, bored. All right, we got to get out of here. Always a pleasure, Teddy.
Talk to you soon, Gabe.
Ted Savransky with us. Take a quick break. Alan Faneca joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's rock and roll. Warren Sharp will join us in a couple of moments' time. We've been breaking down these games, from a fantasy perspective, from a betting perspective, from Tom Brady's father's perspective. We're mixing it up. Tomorrow we've got AVN award-winning XXX webcam model Taylor Stevens' perspective on the football game. She's a big, big New England Patriot fan. But as I told her and as I'm telling everybody, I like the Pittsburgh Steelers in this football game. And we're now joined by one of the greatest Pittsburgh Steelers ever to play, badass at LSU, an All-American, a nine-time Pro Bowler, a 2017 finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and a dude who runs marathons right now. Alan Faneca steps up and in and joins us. Alan, welcome to Game Time Decisions. How you doing, man?
Doing good. How's it going, guys?
Hey, we're doing great, man. Fired up to have you on the program. Really enjoyed watching you play football over the years. Well, I imagine, you know, it's just an honor to, you know, to be even included with all these Hall of Famers. But what's the feeling of being a Hall of Fame finalist?
Last year you go through the process. Last year was the first year I was eligible. And, you know, you just go through the process. You enjoy it. You're glad to be a part of it. And then it comes to be, you know, the day you get the knock on your door, yay or nay, and you're like, well, damn, I'm in the room. You know, there's a chance. And that's when you start to get the jitters a little bit sitting around. It was pretty an epic scene in the hotel room waiting for the knock with the family and the kids bouncing all around me and stuff. It was pretty funny to watch.
I guess, though, it's a strange situation because – you know, being an elite athlete, you're always in control of your own destiny, right? You know, you control things. You know, you made the team. Oh, I can make this team. I can do this. We can beat these guys. This is something that's out of your control, isn't it? I almost think, you know, I was talking with Jerry Kramer about this, and poor guy's been waiting forever. And you know, I was almost thinking, it's sort of like heaven, man. You want to get in, but you don't tell God when you're getting in, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right, man. The hay is in the barn, as they say. It's all there, and you know, you're just waiting around to see what others think and how things go. But that's exactly right.
Well, you know what? And you know, my humble opinion, man. You know, you have a Hall of Fame career, nine-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. You know, played your heart out, and. You know, a revolutionary, an active offensive lineman to get up and down the football field. So let's jump in right now. I want to get your take. For the record, me personally, I enjoyed Antonio Brown's live stream. I thought, hey, this is cool. It's bringing us inside the room. I thought, and secondly, I thought the players looked pretty cool too. No one was acting stupid. Everyone was calm. Hey, we got more business to take care of. And then in the background, Tomlin's talking about, you know, hey, these a-holes got a head start. I thought it was much to do about nothing, but I do understand Tomlin not wanting, you know, guys recording stuff immediately after the game. What's your take on this? You know, if you were in the room and you're on the Steelers, is it a problem or is this just a media, you know, media thing?
You know, I don't think it's a problem. I think it's like one of those things, slowly as guys found out, it was like a really, you know, like that really happened. And, you know, you kind of get past it. You know, it's kind of like a bonehead move, really. And you just move on. And, I mean, I think, you know, it's football. It's not a nice sport. I think everybody uses a little bit of foul language here and there, and especially when you're talking about your opponent. So, I mean, it's like, no big discovery, no big deal going on to the next game, things that Coach Tomlin was talking about. But it is not necessary. You know, I haven't really jumped into the whole Facebook Live thing, but if it truly is live, I mean, you know, there could have been some naked dashes to the shower and stuff on there as well, I suppose.
He had like 40,000 people watching, too. You know, I guess it's a new generation, though, isn't it? I mean, to old school guys, like, this is incredible, and how the hell, you know, he owes everyone an apology. But the fact of the matter is, today's kids, they live vicariously online, Alan. That's just the way that they are right now, right?
The millennial generation, man, that's what they need. They need selfies and validation, so more power to them. But it's all fun, I guess, and, you know, you just go along with it.
Hey, at least Antonio produces. Beckham's running around, you know, with his shirt off and on boats and stuff, and then dropping balls. Antonio is chill, man. You know, I think it was, and I see the media bring it up. How about this, though, Al, when you hear the term media distraction? And I always think, you know, you guys are focused. Football players are focused. Plus, pretty individualistic in a sense that you're worried about your own job. You know, you're doing what you have to do. You know, because the media is distracted by a story, it doesn't mean guys in the room are, you know?
Yeah, and so, you know, and that's the thing. So as you enter the playoffs, you know, when you go through the season, you got your normal group of crony reporters that are there day in and day out, and then you make the playoffs, and all of a sudden the room got a little bit bigger, and you know, there's more people in it. It's a little bit more crowded, you know? All these, everybody's, all the national media's coming in, and all the media's coming in from the other cities that are not involved, but they still have to cover the NFL. And then, you know, as it gets dwindled down, all of a sudden, man, there's a pack of reporters in the room, and that's what they've got right now. You know, there's four teams to talk about, and that's it. So there's going to be a lot of talk about that, just because the lack of anything else to talk about. So, that's part of why it got blown out. If this would have happened, say, in week 7, it would have been a deal, and then next Sunday would have happened or, you know, come close, and everything would have moved on to the next week.
I wanted to ask you about Ben Roethlisberger. You know, you played with him when he was a younger guy. When you see him now, you know, how is he different? How has he matured as a leader on the football field? He seems to be calmer to me from an outside perspective. And I know people have said, and, you know, this is just from an outsider's perspective, that, you know, he was kind of prickly, you know, in his younger days. And, you know, he wasn't, You know, he was kind of, you know, more closed to everybody on the outside. But it seems like over the last few years or years ago, he went out of his way to almost encourage his teammates more and just sort of be more vocal and positive looking with his body language. And now you see him now, and man, he just looks like he's got ice in his veins and nothing fazes the dude.
He has turned into the elder statesman and definitely, you know, the father figure, the guy that everybody looks to see their reaction based off of him. And that's a good thing because, like you said, he does have that cool, calm demeanor, and it's spread through the team, and that's a great thing. But I think definitely as you look at him from younger Ben to now, that on top of just where he's elevated his game and how he sees the field has taken his talents and he's been able to put them in the right places and use them so much better now. And that's what's made him such a great quarterback lately.
Now, you block for a great running back called the Bus. And I'm thinking like Le'Veon Bell, he's not a bus. He's more like, I don't know, man, he's like a hang glider or something. Like, I've been trying to think of like a comparison for this guy. I don't know. He's like a jet ski or something. But as an offensive lineman and as somebody, you know, I know you hung out at the OTAs and you were talking to some of the old linemen and, you know, kicking the tires on some coaching. But when you look at Le'Veon Bell and you look at his patience and how he just sort of everything comes to a standstill and then he just sort of explodes or he slowly walks into this big mob of players and then pops out. It's fascinating, man. I've never seen anything like it. I'm 46, been watching football since, you know, the 70s, started watching in the late 70s. Never seen a running back run with his style before, Alan.
No. He has an amazing feel he has to have because, I mean, if you watch him on a run and, you know, he kind of slow plays it once or twice or maybe more than that, right? But the things that he's seeing to find the hole, I mean, he's not watching one guy. He's watching like two, three, four, five guys. And to figure out where the hole is, and just the perception to see all of that, and to have linebackers closing in on you, and to still find the holes with such patience and time, it's just amazing. It's a skill set on its own.
So, what are the keys to beating the Patriots this week? What's your take on this football game?
You know, I think turnovers are always big when you play the Patriots because they do such a good job of capitalizing on those. They make you pay for those turnovers, so that's key. But I think if you can come into the game with a couple different game plans because they're going to try and take away what they want to take away, and you don't know what that's going to be till you get into the game. So the coaches are going to have to be prepared on that end. But I think if Le'Veon's got a good game and he's getting yardage, that means the offense is doing good things, and that's what the whole team needs offensively and defensively to keep the defense off the field as much as possible with Brady. But if L. Bell is getting yards, I think it's going to be a good day for the Steelers.
That's the thing with Belichick, isn't it? What makes him so tough? He's hard to predict what he's going to do. Like, there's not a lot of teams, this is what we do, and if it doesn't work, then we're kind of screwed. He mixes it up every week. You don't know if it's going to Blunt or it's going to Lewis or whether Brady's going to throw 52 times. They really do adjust the plan on a weekly basis.
They do. And that's you know, been the cornerstone of their whole you know, Belichick era here, and that's what they do. They change things up. You don't know. You have to be able to make sideline adjustments, halftime adjustments, and move and just be ready to adapt. And those guys are just used to it over there. They do it so much that, you know, they can change who they are defensively or offensively on a week-to-week basis because they're just doing it continually all the time.
Before we get you out of here, what's your take on the NFC game? The Packers' O-line was much maligned over the past couple of years. They're doing a great job protecting Rodgers right now. And then meanwhile, you got the Falcons. Man, these guys, they remind me of the old-school Rams team with Holt and Bruce and Warner and Marshall Faulk. Just explosive. It's like an Arena Football League game, this game coming up. Who do you like in this one?
You know, it's definitely not going to be a low-scoring game, that's for sure. You know, I think, you know, I think you can't bet against Aaron Rodgers right now. I know everybody's on his bandwagon, but I think it's a close game, and I think if it's close down the end, I think Rodgers finds a way to pull it out.
Alan Faneca with us. Alan, it's been great having you on the program. I wish we had more time. I know you're a busy busy man, but we wish you the best of luck with future Hall of Fame calls, and we'd love to get you back on the program and talk about it when it happens, man.
That sounds great.
There's Alan Faneca with us, former Pittsburgh Steeler, 9-time Pro Bowler. He will be a Hall of Famer. Yeah, the guy's on the all-Pittsburgh Steelers team, one of the most storied franchises in NFL history. 9-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, you know, clearly a Hall of Famer. But as we talked about earlier in the program, there's a Hall of Fame weight game that you have to play. Football, there's politics with everything. But football, you know, you do have to wait. You get in line and you wait. That's the way that it goes with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. All right, we'll take a quick break. Warren Sharp will join us from the Handicappers Hall of Fame. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. The show's just flown by today. We started out with Teddy Covers, a.k.a. Ted Safransky. Alan Faneca joined us. We were briefly teased with a potential Tim Raines call, actually, believe it or not, and I was unaware. You know, we did the opening about Tim Raines getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, and then we were told that, you know what, Tim Raines might be calling in a couple of minutes. It's not happening, and Tim Raines is busy tomorrow. I think he's actually going to Cooperstown tomorrow, but this means that we got Tim Raines on the radar. We'll track down Mr. Tim Raines, the Hall of Famer, next week on Game Time Decisions. Let's bring in, if they had a Hall of Fame for handicappers and analysts, Warren Sharp be a first ballot inductee. Warren Sharp, sharpfootballanalysis.com, returns to the rotation. Warren, always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for that first ballot nomination. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got my vote. You got my vote, Warren. The son of a bitch is at the Major League Baseball writers. They're not giving me a vote. So, you know, maybe I need to start my own Game Time Decisions Hall of Fame. We actually started a Sports Rage podcast Hall of Fame, and that was a real circus, but that's a whole other story. But, Warren, let's jump right in here, man. We got the Packers and the Falcons. I've been talking about these numbers all week long, but historic-type stuff. I've compared this Falcon team to that explosive Rams team, the fastest show on turf, with Holt, with Bruce, with Falk, with Kurt Warner, etc. But they've scored the most points in NFL history. Matt Ryan's quarterback rating is the fifth highest in NFL history. And, you know, the lack of turnovers, the lowest turnovers in the league, tied with the New England Patriots. There's a lot to like about this offense. Total sitting at 60 right now. Were you surprised when you saw it as high as it was set at?
I was surprised because my model had been pretty accurate at picking up what I thought the lines were going to be projected at based on historically what they had been setting them at. And obviously then I come back with my own number completely independently and look at how they compare it to. So I was anticipating a number closer to around 57 to be set on this game. And of course, I think they intentionally elevated it. They knew that they had no interest in getting any of the sharper money to be betting on this over here because they're extremely worried about the game going over the total. So they set it multiple points higher than what potentially they should have set it at. They're going to scare away all of that money, and they're potentially going to be able to get attract a little bit of that sharper money towards the under. Of course, the public isn't going to be betting the under in a game like this for the most part. I mean, some guys might be intrigued to take such a high number and go under, but a lot of people still won't be scared. They can still easily see a game where both teams have right around 30 points, and that would almost be enough with overtime or, you know, a 31 to 32, 33 type game would get them over this number. So I think they're still going to get publicly, the public is going to come back on the over in this one.
Yeah, the Falcons 9-0 to the over in the Georgia Dome this year, 14-2-1 to the over on the season. The Packers are on a 6-game over streak, scoring 34.9 points per game during this run. 8-game win streak, 6-game over streak right now. Jordy Nelson, he's talking about, didn't sound too hopeful. He got on the practice field yesterday, And he said, this is pain I've never dealt with before. And, you know, unless he's bluffing, I don't think Jordy Nelson's going to be playing this week. And now we get word, of course, Devontae Adams is being held out of practice. So, I don't, you know, Devontae Adams obviously has nothing to prove in practice this week. But it's either, no, don't worry about it, you know, just rest up until game day. Or there's a problem with Devontae Adams because, you know, he wasn't even on the practice field. Like, normally if a guy, you know, can't practice but he's going to play, he'll be walking around catching balls and stuff, Warren. But Adams was not there with an ankle problem right now. What's your expectation with this? How much of an impact would it have? You know, like, I expect Devontae to play. I do not expect Jordy to play. What are you expecting?
Yeah, I'm expecting the same. I mean, I would be absolutely shocked. I see no chance that Jordy plays. One hit, you know, depending on how bad those ribs are, not only would take him out of the game, but could cause some significant medical issue for him. So I would be shocked. But I mean, who knows? I'm not there. I don't know what type of padding they could fit him up with, and that sort of thing. It's a pain tolerance thing, but then it's also a safety thing. Devontae, like you mentioned, I mean, at this time of the season, they know what they want to do. They've played these guys before this year. I don't think it's a big deal if he rests the entire week, as long as Mike McCarthy is able to give him the green light to go before the game starts. I feel comfortable with him playing, but, you know, you never know what happened after the game and the swelling and that type of thing that may have occurred there. I know Geronimo also is dealing with, I believe it's a hamstring injury, but it's an issue. And you mentioned some of the historic things about this Atlanta Falcons offense. I'll throw one out there that really is getting no run, and that's the fact that this team is averaging 19 points on average in the first half. That is the fourth best all-time in the NFL, in NFL history. The other teams who were above them was like the 2007 New England Patriots, who obviously almost went with the perfect season. And then you have a couple of other teams who were able to get such high marks in the past. I believe one was the Denver Broncos years back, and the other was actually the 2014 Green Bay Packers with the historic offense. But the point being here, what this team attempts to do, and they could have a lot of success against the Green Bay Packers from this regard, if you heard the old war term, like war strategy that the Germans were using in World War II, is a blitzkrieg. It's basically getting out really quickly and attacking. It's called lightning war. They would get out, they would try to attack quickly and surround the enemy very quickly to create a very short, successful military campaign, resulted in more lives saved, more ammunition saved, and that sort of thing. That's what the Falcons do. They try to come out really strong in the first half, overwhelm you, score a bunch of points, then make you completely change your own offensive strategy to not utilize your most efficient way to beat, instead have to play catch up and chase you out of fear that you're going to continue to run it up on them. So they should be able to get out early in this game with a lot of offense and produce some points, in my opinion, against this Green Bay secondary.
Yeah, Warren Sharp with us. Sorry, Warren, this happens all the time. We take too much time on the first game, and I've been doing this with every guest, and we never have enough time for the next game. As you stated, the total is going to scare away the Sharps, but, you know, I'm looking. I think the Falcons pull away. I think the Falcons are going to win like 42-35, 42-34. I see the Falcons getting into the 40s. I really do.
Well, I can tell you this one last stat, to just in the sense of time, is that a lot of people are saying, well, the Falcons should slow it down. They should play tempo, run the ball, eat up the clock, keep Aaron Rodgers on the bench. Do people not realize that the average scoring drive when Atlanta scores touchdowns is 3.5 minutes long? And that's even when they're starting way back at their own 20-yard line. I mean, on average, they're running like 7.6 plays before they score a touchdown. I mean, this is a very quick tempo offense that's capable of putting up points. In terms of the total, I don't see value in going over, but you're not going to find me looking to back the under in this spot either. There's some other ways that you can get at this, in my opinion.
All right, Warren, the Steelers and the Patriots, the total has been remaining around 50. Point spread's up to 6 right now. You know, the Patriots, everyone talks about Tom Brady all the time, but the defense only gives up 15.9 points per game. You got a Pittsburgh Steeler team that didn't score a touchdown last week, and historically in their last 7 road playoff games have only averaged 19 points per game. You know, this game does not feel like a track meet to me, but at the same point in time, you know, there is a lot of skill on the field here. What do you make of this game?
Both these defenses are overhyped. I mean, you just mentioned the New England Patriots' number one scoring defense. They're not going to allow very many points when they're facing quarterbacks who can't even convert on third down, who can't even sustain multi-play or multi-first down type drives. And they played literally out of their 17 games this year, five have come against starting quarterbacks, quarterbacks who were starters heading into the year, did not get benched during the year, and are definitely starters heading into next season. Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton, Carson Palmer, and Russell Wilson. If I name those five, everybody knows who they are. The fact of the matter is these five quarterbacks have had bad years this year overall. But still, those five quarterbacks against this Patriots pass defense combined to go 103 passer rating, 70% completions, 7.9 yards per attempt, 10 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. So that's the myth about this Patriots defense. It's not that they've gone up against the easiest schedule of opposing quarterbacks. It's that there is such a massive gap over at sharpfootballstats.com. You can look strength of schedule. You can look at the schedule at this Patriots defense has faced in terms of offenses and quarterbacks. It's not even close to the rest of the NFL in terms of difficulty. Now, the big myth about the Pittsburgh Steelers defense is the fact that they're this team that's getting better sacking the quarterback, and they're going to be coming with the blitz, and they're going to be doing a lot of work getting to Tom Brady. That's a complete bust as well. The Pittsburgh Steelers, if you look at the games where they recorded their sacks, they had 8 sacks against Cleveland week 11, 3 sacks against the Colts week 12, 5 sacks against your Bills week 14, another 4 against Cleveland week 17, and then they had 5 sacks against Matt Moore, the backup for the Miami Dolphins in the wild card game. They've gotten a ton of sacks against basically bottom 5 pass protection offenses. When they've gone up against decent pass protection offenses like the New England Patriots are, 3 out of the 6 games that they played, they had no sacks. And the other 3 games, they had 2, 2, and 3 sacks in those games. Never did they eclipse 10% sack rate in any of those games. So this Patriots offense should have enough time, I believe, to be able to be productive against the Steelers defense. I do not fear that Tom Brady is going to be crushed with this pass rush. Maybe hit a couple of times, but I think overall they'll be able to scheme their way around it and have some success with Brady throwing the ball against these guys.
Warren Sharp with us. We got to get out of here, Warren. So, maybe taking a look at maybe the over of this game.
I'm leaning a little bit towards the over, but I want to look at the weather a little bit more.
Yeah.
I've seen the winds are supposed to pick up later on in the evening. This is the late game that day, and so that's a big concern. I think it's going to rain the following day and overnight, so it depends how quickly that front gets here. Obviously, it's only Thursday, so we've got a few days before this game kicks off.
Warren Sharp, check out his final analysis and selections over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Warren, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
You got it.
And we'll come right back with our plays of the day. All right, we've got to be really quick with our plays of the day today. The Wizards got it done for us last night on their home court. It's risky on the road tonight, but they own the Knicks in New York, and the Knicks played last night, too. Give me the Wizards. Let's take the Nuggets plus 12 against a sleepwalking San Antonio Spurs team. Let's go over 220.5 points. A little college basketball. Our college picks have been good this week. LaSalle to beat Davidson. Give me the Richmond Spiders, man, plus 12.5 against the Dayton Flyers. Cal and the Ducks over 131.5, and Gonzaga Santa Clara over 138. May the winners be yours.